The Great Chapter, Part 2, translated by Bhikkhu Sujato. Depending on absorption. Mendicants, I say that the first absorption is a basis for ending the defilements. The second absorption is also a basis for ending the defilements. The third absorption is also a basis for ending the defilements. The fourth absorption is also a basis for ending the defilements. The dimension of infinite space is also a basis for ending the defilements. The dimension of infinite consciousness is also a basis for ending the defilements. The dimension of nothingness is also a basis for ending the defilements. The dimension of neither perception nor non-perception is also a basis for ending the defilements. The cessation of perception and feeling is also a basis for ending the defilements. The first absorption is a basis for ending the defilements. That's what I said, but why did I say it? Take a mendicant who, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unskillful qualities, enters and remains in the first absorption. They contemplate the phenomena there, included in form, feeling, perception, choices, and consciousness, as impermanent, as suffering, as diseased, as a boil, as a dart, as misery, as an affliction, as alien, as falling apart, as empty, as not self. They turn their mind away from those things and apply it to freedom from death. This is peaceful. This is sublime, that is, the stilling of all activities, the letting go of all attachments, the ending of craving, fading away, cessation, extinguishment. Abiding in that, they attain the ending of defilements. If they don't attain the ending of defilements, with the ending of the five lower fetters, they're reborn spontaneously, because of their passion and love for that meditation. They are extinguished there, and are not liable to return from that world. It's like an archer or their apprentice who first practices on a straw man or a clay model. At a later time they become a long-distance shooter, a marksman, who shatters large objects. In the same way, a noble disciple, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, enters and remains in the first absorption. They contemplate the phenomena there, included in form, feeling, perception, choices, and consciousness, as impermanent, as suffering, as diseased, as a boil, as a dart, as misery, as an affliction, as alien, as falling apart, as empty, as not self. They turn their mind away from those things and apply it to freedom from death. This is peaceful, this is sublime, that is, the stilling of all activities, the letting go of all attachments, the ending of craving, fading away, cessation, extinguishment. Abiding in that, they attain the ending of defilements. If they don't attain the ending of defilements, with the ending of the five lower fetters, they're reborn spontaneously because of their passion and love for that meditation. They are extinguished there and are not liable to return from that world. The first absorption is a basis for ending the defilements. That's what I said, and this is why I said it. The second absorption is also a basis for ending the defilements. The third absorption is also a basis for ending the defilements. The fourth absorption is also a basis for ending the defilements. The dimension of infinite space is also a basis for ending the defilements. That's what I said, but why did I say it? Take a mendicant who, going totally beyond perceptions of form, with the ending of perceptions of impingement, not focusing on perceptions of diversity, aware that space is infinite, enters and remains in the dimension of infinite space. They contemplate the phenomena there, included in feeling, perception, choices, and consciousness, as impermanent, as suffering, as diseased, as a boil, as a dart, as misery, as an affliction, as alien, as falling apart, as empty, as not self. They turn their mind away from those things and apply it to freedom from death. This is peaceful. This is sublime. That is, the stilling of all activities, the letting go of all attachments, the ending of craving, fading away, cessation, extinguishment. Abiding in that, they attain the ending of defilements. If they don't attain the ending of defilements, with the ending of the five lower fetters, they're reborn spontaneously because of their passion and love for that meditation. They are extinguished there and are not liable to return from that world. It's like an archer or their apprentice who first practices on a straw man or a clay model. At a later time, they become a long-distance shooter, a marksman, who shatters large objects. In the same way, take a mendicant who enters and remains in the dimension of infinite space. The dimension of infinite space is a basis for ending the defilements. That's what I said, and this is why I said it. The dimension of infinite consciousness is a basis for ending the defilements. The dimension of nothingness is a basis for ending the defilements. That's what I said, but why did I say it? Take a mendicant who, going totally beyond the dimension of infinite consciousness, aware that there is nothing at all, enters and remains in the dimension of nothingness. They contemplate the phenomena there, included in feeling, perception, choices, and consciousness, as impermanent, as suffering, as diseased, as a boil, as a dart, as misery, as an affliction, as alien, as falling apart, as empty, as not self. They turn their mind away from those things and apply it to freedom from death. This is peaceful. This is sublime. That is, the stilling of all activities, the letting go of all attachments, the ending of craving, fading away, cessation, extinguishment. Abiding in that, they attain the ending of defilements. If they don't attain the ending of defilements, with the ending of the five lower fetters, they're reborn spontaneously because of their passion and love for that meditation. They are extinguished there and are not liable to return from that world. It's like an archer or their apprentice who first practices on a straw man or a clay model. At a later time, they become a long-distance shooter, a marksman who shatters large objects. In the same way, take a mendicant who, going totally beyond the dimension of infinite consciousness, aware that there is nothing at all, enters and remains in the dimension of nothingness. They contemplate the phenomena there, included in feeling, perception, choices, and consciousness, as impermanent, as suffering, as diseased, as a boil, as a dart, as misery, as an affliction, as alien, as falling apart, as empty, as not self. They turn their mind away from those things and apply it to freedom from death. This is peaceful. This is sublime. That is, the stilling of all activities, the letting go of all attachments, the ending of craving, fading away, cessation, extinguishment. Abiding in that, they attain the ending of defilements. If they don't attain the ending of defilements, with the ending of the five lower fetters, they're reborn spontaneously because of their passion and love for that meditation. They are extinguished there and are not liable to return from that world. The dimension of nothingness is a basis for ending the defilements. That's what I said, and this is why I said it. And so, mendicants, penetration to enlightenment extends as far as attainments with perception. But the two dimensions that depend on these, the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception, and the cessation of perception and feeling, are properly explained by mendicants who are skilled in these attainments and skilled in emerging from them, after they've entered them and emerged from them. By Ananda. At one time, Venerable Ananda was staying near Kosambi in Gusita's monastery. There, Ananda addressed the mendicants, reverends, mendicants. Reverend, they replied. Ananda said this, It's incredible, reverends, it's amazing, how this blessed one who knows and sees, the perfected one, the fully awakened Buddha, has found an opening amid confinement. It's in order to purify sentient beings, to get past sorrow and crying, to make an end of pain and sadness, to discover the system, and to realize extinguishment. The eye itself is actually present, and so are those sights. Yet one will not experience that sense field. The ear itself is actually present, and so are those sounds. Yet one will not experience that sense field. The nose itself is actually present, and so are those smells. Yet one will not experience that sense field. The tongue itself is actually present, and so are those tastes. Yet one will not experience that sense field. The body itself is actually present, and so are those touches. Yet one will not experience that sense field. When he said this, Venerable Udayi said to Venerable Ananda, Reverend Ananda, is one who doesn't experience that sense field actually percipient or not? Reverend, one who doesn't experience that sense field is actually percipient, not non-percipient. But what does one who doesn't experience that sense field perceive? It's when a mendicant, going totally beyond perceptions of form, with the ending of perceptions of impingement, not focusing on perceptions of diversity, aware that space is infinite, enters and remains in the dimension of infinite space. One who doesn't experience that sense field perceives in this way. Furthermore, a mendicant, going totally beyond the dimension of infinite space, aware that consciousness is infinite, enters and remains in the dimension of infinite consciousness. One who doesn't experience that sense field perceives in this way. Furthermore, a mendicant going totally beyond the dimension of infinite consciousness, aware that there is nothing at all, enters and remains in the dimension of nothingness. One who doesn't experience that sense field perceives in this way. Reverend, this one time I was staying near Sarkita in the deer park in Anjana Wood. Then the nun, Jatila Gahika, came to me, bowed, stood to one side and said to me, Honourable Ananda, regarding the immersion that does not lean forward or pull back and is not held in place by forceful suppression, being free, it's stable. Being stable, it's content. Being content, one is not anxious. What did the Buddha say was the fruit of this immersion? When she said this, I said to her, Sister, regarding the immersion that does not lean forward or pull back, and is not held in place by forceful suppression, being free, it's stable. Being stable, it's content. Being content, one is not anxious. The Buddha said that the fruit of this immersion is enlightenment. One who doesn't experience that sense field perceives in this way too. Brahmin cosmologists. Then two Brahmin cosmologists went up to the Buddha and exchanged greetings with him. When the greetings and polite conversation were over, they sat down to one side and said to the Buddha, Mr. Gotama, Purana Kassapa claims to be all-knowing and all-seeing, to know and see everything without exception. Thus, knowledge and vision are constantly and continually present to me, while walking, standing, sleeping, and waking. He says, With infinite knowledge I know and see that the cosmos is infinite. And the Jain ascetic of the Nartika clan also claims to be all-knowing and all-seeing, to know and see everything without exception. Thus, knowledge and vision are constantly and continually present to me, while walking, standing, sleeping, and waking. He says, With infinite knowledge I know and see that the cosmos is finite. These two claim to speak from knowledge, but they directly contradict each other. Which one of them speaks the truth, and which falsehood? Enough, Brahmins, let that be. I will teach you the Dhamma. Listen and apply your mind well, I will speak. Yes, sir, those Brahmins replied. The Buddha said this. Suppose there were four men standing in the four quarters. Each of them was extremely fast, with an extremely mighty stride. They're as fast as a light arrow, easily shot across the shadow of a palm tree by a well-trained expert archer with a strong bow. Their stride was such that it spanned from the Eastern Ocean to the Western Ocean. Then the man standing in the east would say, I will reach the end of the world by travelling. Though he'd travel for his whole lifespan of 100 years, pausing only to eat and drink, go to the toilet and sleep to dispel weariness, he'd die along the way, never reaching the end of the world. Then the man standing in the west, then the man standing in the north, then the man standing in the south would say, I will reach the end of the world by travelling. Though he'd travel for his whole lifespan of 100 years, pausing only to eat and drink, go to the toilet and sleep to dispel weariness, he'd die along the way, never reaching the end of the world. Why is that? I say it's not possible to know or see or reach the end of the world by running like this. But I also say there's no making an end of suffering without reaching the end of the world. These five kinds of sensual stimulation are called the world in the training of the Noble One. What five? Sights known by the eye, which are likeable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual, and arousing. Sounds known by the ear, smells known by the nose, tastes known by the tongue, touches known by the body, which are likeable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual, and arousing. These five kinds of sensual stimulation are called the world in the training of the Noble One. Take a mendicant who, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unskilful qualities, enters and remains in the first absorption, which has the rapture and bliss born of seclusion while placing the mind and keeping it connected. This is called a mendicant who, having gone to the end of the world, meditates at the end of the world. Others say of them, they're included in the world and haven't yet left the world. And I also say this, they're included in the world and haven't yet left the world. Furthermore, take a mendicant who, as the placing of the mind and keeping it connected are stilled, enters and remains in the second absorption, third absorption, fourth absorption. This is called a mendicant who, having gone to the end of the world, meditates at the end of the world. Others say of them, they're included in the world and haven't yet left the world. And I also say this, they're included in the world and haven't yet left the world. Furthermore, take a mendicant who, going totally beyond perceptions of form, with the ending of perceptions of impingement, not focusing on perceptions of diversity, aware that space is infinite, enters and remains in the dimension of infinite space. This is called a mendicant who, having gone to the end of the world, meditates at the end of the world. Others say of them, they're included in the world and haven't yet left the world. And I also say this, they're included in the world and haven't yet left the world. Furthermore, take a mendicant who enters and remains in the dimension of infinite consciousness, the dimension of nothingness, the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. This is called a mendicant who, having gone to the end of the world, meditates at the end of the world. Others say of them, they're included in the world and haven't yet left the world. And I also say this, they're included in the world and haven't yet left the world. Furthermore, take a mendicant who, going totally beyond the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception enters and remains in the cessation of perception and feeling. And having seen with wisdom, their defilements come to an end. This is called a mendicant who, having gone to the end of the world, meditates at the end of the world. And they've crossed over clinging to the world. The War Between the Gods and the Titans. Once upon a time, mendicants, a battle was fought between the gods and the Titans. In that battle, the Titans won and the gods lost. Defeated, the gods fled north with the Titans in pursuit. Then the gods thought, "The Titans are still in pursuit. Why don't we engage them in battle a second time?" And so a second battle was fought between the gods and the Titans. And for a second time, the Titans won and the gods lost. Defeated, the gods fled north with the Titans in pursuit. Then the gods thought, "The Titans are still in pursuit. Why don't we engage them in battle a third time?" And so a third battle was fought between the gods and the Titans. And for a third time the Titans won and the gods lost. Defeated and terrified, the gods fled right into the castle of the gods. When they had entered their castle, they thought, "Now we're in a secure location and the Titans can't do anything to us." The Titans also thought, "Now the gods are in a secure location and we can't do anything to them." Once upon a time, a battle was fought between the gods and the Titans. In that battle, the gods won and the Titans lost. Defeated, the Titans fled south with the gods in pursuit. Then the Titans thought, "The gods are still in pursuit. Why don't we engage them in battle a second time?" And so a second battle was fought between the gods and the Titans. And for a second time the gods won and the Titans lost. Defeated, the Titans fled south with the gods in pursuit. Then the Titans thought, "The gods are still in pursuit. Why don't we engage them in battle a third time?" And so a third battle was fought between the gods and the Titans. And for a third time the gods won and the Titans lost. Defeated and terrified, the Titans fled right into the citadel of the Titans. When they had entered their citadel, they thought, "Now we're in a secure location and the gods can't do anything to us." And the gods also thought, "Now the Titans are in a secure location and we can't do anything to them." In the same way, there's a time when a mendicant, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unskillful qualities, enters and remains in the first absorption, which has the rapture and bliss born of seclusion while placing the mind and keeping it connected. At that time the mendicant thinks, "Now I'm in a secure location and Mara can't do anything to me." And Mara the wicked also thinks, "Now the mendicant is in a secure location and we can't do anything to them." There's a time when, as the placing of the mind and keeping it connected are stilled, a mendicant enters and remains in the second absorption, third absorption, fourth absorption. At that time, the mendicant thinks, "Now I'm in a secure location and Mara can't do anything to me." And Mara the wicked also thinks, "Now the mendicant is in a secure location and we can't do anything to them." There's a time when a mendicant, going totally beyond perceptions of form, with the ending of perceptions of impingement, not focusing on perceptions of diversity, aware that space is infinite, enters and remains in the dimension of infinite space. This is called a mendicant who has blinded Mara, put out his eyes without a trace, and gone where the wicked one cannot see. There's a time when a mendicant, going totally beyond the dimension of infinite space, aware that consciousness is infinite, enters and remains in the dimension of infinite consciousness. Going totally beyond the dimension of infinite consciousness, aware that there is nothing at all, they enter and remain in the dimension of nothingness. Going totally beyond the dimension of nothingness, they enter and remain in the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. Going totally beyond the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception, they enter and remain in the cessation of perception and feeling. And, having seen with wisdom, their defilements come to an end. This is called a mendicant who has blinded Mara, put out his eyes without a trace, and gone where the wicked one cannot see. And they've crossed over, clinging to the world.